Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participant lines are in the listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tanisha, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's workshop, a collaborative effort between the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. It's part of our Living with T-Cell Lymphoma series. This is Part 3, Managing Treatment Side Effects. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort, and because of that collaboration, we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have over 506 participants on the call today from all over the United States, from all different regions, and we also have international participants from Argentina, Canada, China, India, Korea, Morocco, Nigeria, Syria, Thailand, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So really from all over the world. It's truly a global call. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is an outline that our speakers are covering, and there also is information about all the different collaborating organizations as wonderful resources for you. There's also an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the end of the program today and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the programs you'd like us to offer going forward? And indeed, today's topic is one that many of you have asked us to cover, so we're offering it. We're planning many programs for 2012, so we want to be sure to cover the things that really are relevant to your needs. Now, today's program is made possible, was supported through grants to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Allos Therapeutics, Celgene, and Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. And I really want to thank them for this really collaborative collaboration in supporting this program in this industry and a collaborative effort to support this important program today. Now, we have wonderful speakers on the program today, and I want to start by introducing our first two speakers. And our first two speakers are Dr. Owen O'Connor, Professor of Medicine and Pharmacology, Deputy Cancer Center Director, New York University Cancer Institute, Chief Division of Hematology and Medical Oncology, NYU Langone Medical Center, and Dr. Barbara Pro, Associate Professor of Medicine, Fox Chase Cancer Center. And they're going to address brief overview of T-cell lymphoma and causes of treatment side effects, managing nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and constipation, practical tips to deal with fatigue and control infection, communicating with your healthcare team. I'm going to turn the program now over to Dr. O'Connor.
Thank you very much, Carolyn, and hello to all of you patients that are listening or the patients and their families. And I want to thank Carolyn and her colleagues at Cancer Care, as well as our colleagues at the Lymphoma Research Foundation for all that they do for helping us as physicians take care of patients all over the world. Today I've been asked to give you a brief overview of T-cell lymphoma and to try and touch on some of the major side effects of both the diseases and or the therapies that patients receive for these diseases. And we'll talk about a number of the more prominent side effects of the disease and chemotherapy, including things like fatigue, nausea, vomiting, and we'll try to give some strategies for how you can best remediate those side effects. Now, the T-cell lymphomas are a pretty complex set of diseases, and in comparison to the B-cell lymphomas, they're relatively rare diseases. Each year in the United States, there's about 64,000 cases per year of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and the T-cell lymphomas comprise only about 10 to 15% of all those cases. So if you look at them across the board, there's only 6,000 to 9,000 new cases of T-cell lymphoma in the United States. But one of the growing challenges over the last several years has been that our understanding of these discrete diseases, classification of T-cell lymphoma, has gotten a little bit more complex. And we now probably recognize anywhere between 15 and 20 different kinds of T-cell lymphoma. In total, there's probably about 68 different types of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So these are very complex diseases, and oftentimes, given the relative rarity of these diseases, it's preferable to see physicians who actually specialize in these subsets of diseases. But when we talk about T-cell lymphomas and the complexities, what's also an enormous challenge is the fact that these diseases tend to be a little bit more challenging to treat compared to the B-cell lymphomas, which are far more common. And in fact, there's really very little consensus about how best to treat patients with peripheral T-cell lymphoma, both upfront or in the relapsed refractory state. Upfront, a lot of physicians recommend combination chemotherapy, usually with CHOP-based chemotherapy, and in some cases with T-cell lymphoma, a recommendation for an upfront autologous stem cell transplant. That means a bone marrow transplant in first complete remission has been shown to somewhat improve the outcome of treatment. But of course, and unfortunately, not every patient is a candidate for autologous stem cell transplant, so those decisions are best made in a dialogue between yourself and your treating physician. Now, T-cell lymphomas themselves have some unusual characteristics and behaviors that sometimes can cause a number of symptoms that are a little bit different from what we typically see in patients with B-cell lymphoma. And probably first and foremost among these is itch and pruritus. It's not uncommon for patients with T-cell lymphoma, and in fact it can be a common side effect of cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, that pruritus or itch is a common feature of the disease. And many times that itch is often the most troublesome symptom for most patients. Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of great therapies for itch, and probably the best therapy for pruritus is, in fact, treatment of the underlying disease with some form of chemotherapy. Topical therapies don't tend to work all that well because we typically think of the itch as being a systemic disease, and it's probably related to the fact that these T-cell lymphomas secrete small proteins into the blood, and these proteins or cytokines create sort of an inflammation of the skin that produces the itch. There are a variety of medicines that doctors can use to treat the itch, but sometimes the side effects of these medicines can be as troubling as the itch itself. They're oftentimes associated with sleepiness and make you drowsy. So you have to be careful about how you take these medicines. And unfortunately, there's no one medicine that's been shown to be really, really good at alleviating the itch. There are classes of drugs, namely drugs like vorinostat and some of the new classes of drugs known as HDAC inhibitors, that have as one of their prominent therapeutic effects is to alleviate itch related to T-cell lymphoma. The only the two HDAC inhibitors that are approved today are SAHA and a new drug called romidepsin. And actually, studies have been done with both of these drugs, and they actually show that by treating the underlying lymphoma, they're very effective at alleviating the itch. Probably the next big side effect that patients complain about is fatigue. And fatigue is one of those complex side effects. It can be due to the underlying disease. And again, these diseases do secrete lots of different chemical messengers. And those chemical messengers can act on the brain to actually make you fatigued. So probably if you can, the best form of therapy for fatigue is, again, to treat the underlying disease. But many times, the chemotherapy itself can make you somewhat fatigued. And so there's a cumulative toxicity, meaning that the more chemotherapy you get, the more fatigue you can develop. And it's not uncommon that patients towards the end of their fifth or sixth cycle of chemotherapy often experience sometimes their most significant fatigue. There are a number of different strategies to treat fatigue, but again, when you talk about it, there's really no one clear consensus about a medication that reverses it or a strategy that can reverse it. I find in our practice that we actually encourage patients to try to continue working if they can. We encourage them to try to get as much physical exercise as they can, and that may mean simply going out for walks in the morning or walks in the afternoon or walks in the evening. And I think that keeping up with some sort of exercise program can have a favorable impact on the management of your overall fatigue. There are some pharmacologic therapies, and there's one. There are a number of drugs that can be used to treat fatigue. A lot of these are drugs that are used to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, ADD. And these drugs are actually pretty good. If you can take low doses in the morning, sometimes a low dose at lunchtime, these drugs are psychostimulants that have the ability, they're amphetamines, that have the ability to sort of give you a little bit of pep. They obviously have to be prescribed carefully because you wouldn't want to prescribe them to patients with certain cardiac or heart issues. But these medicines have been actually shown to help patients tolerate many, many different types of chemotherapy and can actually help remediate some of the fatigue associated with chemotherapy and the disease. The other set of side effects that are pretty common includes nausea, vomiting, constipation, and diarrhea. These side effects really can vary. Sometimes the diseases themselves can produce these side effects, but that's not that common. In fact, the most common reason for most of these side effects, especially for nausea and vomiting, are probably related to the chemotherapy. And when we talk about, and I haven't talked about it today, and I presume you've heard about it in some of the other sessions, but there's been nothing less than an explosion of new drugs for the treatment of the T-cell lymphomas. There's never been a more exciting time to be in the field developing new therapies for patients with this particular disease. But when you hear us talk about that, in fact, what often gets left off the table is that while we've made great advances in treating different kinds of cancer and lymphoma, probably our most spectacular advances have been in treating many of the side effects of chemotherapy. And there are a host of different drugs that are actually very, very effective at preventing nausea and vomiting. And in the old days, it used to be fairly common that patients would have sometimes intractable nausea and vomiting associated with chemotherapies. And not every chemotherapy is known to induce nausea vomiting. Some are more likely to do it than others. But in good, well-qualified hands, most doctors today have access to all of the tools they need to actually help patients get around the side effects of nausea and vomiting. And we'll talk in a minute about some of the best strategies to do that. But many of these medicines are actually prescribed by the doctors and the nurses that work with the doctors. And again, there are many different types of nausea. So there's nausea that happens when you immediately get the chemotherapy, and sometimes there's delayed nausea that happens days later. And it turns out many of these drugs address different kinds of nausea and vomiting. Issues related to constipation and diarrhea are also not uncommon. They can be associated with all sorts of things. Even antibiotics can be associated with some diarrhea because antibiotics can have a significant impact on the bacteria and microbial flora in the gut. We find that depending upon the cause of the diarrhea, there are different types of recommendations. Sometimes the nurses or the doctors may recommend changes in diet. There's some diet known as the BRAT diet that consists of bran and apples and other things that may help alleviate the symptoms associated with diarrhea. Sometimes there are medications like simethicone, anti-gas medications, that can help with some of the bloating that you might get with constipation and diarrhea. And there are obviously medicines to take for the diarrhea. And you want to be careful about taking some of these medicines for the diarrhea. They can make you relatively dehydrated at a point in your care when you may be relatively dehydrated to begin with, but the key to managing all of these side effects, and there really is one important key, and that key is to maintain an open dialogue with your healthcare team, and more importantly, your healthcare, the nurses that are helping to take care of you. The nurses are particularly well-trained and expert at dealing with many of the side effects of chemotherapy. So most nurses are actually very familiar with the medications to treat nausea, vomiting, constipation, diarrhea, and fatigue. And I think the key here is to just remember that there's no such thing as a stupid question or a stupid phone call to the doctor's office. They're more than happy to deal with these questions. And more really importantly, it's important to have that dialogue whenever the symptoms develop. It's really critical that you don't wait 2, 3 days, 5 days, a week to let the office know, because there's no reason for you to suffer with these symptoms, because oftentimes the remedies are very, very effective. And oftentimes letting it sit and letting the symptom be brew for several days can be more dangerous than treating it at that particular time. So in conclusion, I think that it's a very exciting time developing new therapies for these particular diseases. Of course, those therapies and the diseases are associated with side effects, and I think open dialogue with your doctor's office and nurses is probably the singular best strategy to try to approach the remediation of these problems in a very prompt fashion.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. O'Connor, for just a really outstanding presentation and very informative with lots of tips for everybody. And I can't thank you enough for your presentation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Lowell Anderson-Reitz. Lowell is a nurse practitioner, blood and marrow transplant nurse practitioner, Baylor Blood and Marrow Transplant Program. This is a multidisciplinary presentation. And Mr. Anderson Reitz is going to cover coping with rash and dry skin, managing mouth sores and dry mouth, nutritional concerns and eating hints, quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Mr. Anderson Reitz.
Thank you very much, Caroline. I appreciate the opportunity to be involved with this call today and hopefully have some good dialogue with everyone that's out there that is dealing with some of these issues that we're talking about today. I'm going to start by speaking about rash and dry skin, and Dr. O'Connor actually touched on this very nicely with since this is one of those issues with T-cell lymphomas, both with cutaneous T-cell lymphomas as well as the peripheral T-cell lymphomas that is very common. And rash is, of course, being very common in the cutaneous T-cell lymphoma and certainly more common in the T-cell than the B-cell population of lymphoma patients. And it's a very difficult thing to deal with, and unfortunately there are not a lot of good therapies that are out there to help us with those rashes, except as Dr. O'Connor mentioned, treating the underlying disease first. That is certainly the most effective way to treat these rashes, the patches and plaques that can develop associated with these diseases. Certainly, dry skin is also a major issue, which can be a part of the disease process as well as the therapies that people are receiving along with this. So one of the things that I want to talk about certainly is just what we can use as far as lotions and emollients on the skin to assist with some of the rashes and dry skin, and always being cognizant of what is actually included in those lotions if you're buying things over the counter, making sure that there are not there's not alcohol included in these kinds of lotions, because certainly alcohol is going to dry the skin further and certainly add to itch that people may be experiencing. Also being cognizant about certainly scent-free lotions. Anytime that you have a scent added to it, that actually may make some of those symptoms worse for people. Oatmeal baths or different products with oatmeal, certainly have had lots of patients that have stated that these kinds of products certainly help with itch as well as the dry skin. There are also a number of medications that, of course, are not necessarily specifically approved for itch for patients that certainly are prescribed, as well as some over-the-counter medications that can help with that the itch, which, again, is such a major issue for so many people. I'm going to move into the next area, which is managing mouth sores and dry mouth. And this, again, is and can be such a difficult thing to deal with when people are going through, especially systemic therapies, combination chemotherapy regimens, oftentimes can cause mouth sores. So the thing that we want to focus on first as your healthcare team is to try and prevent mucositis from developing. And part of our job along with patients and families is certainly kind of looking at things up front. What is your dental history? How do you take care of your mouth? Those kinds of things that may put you at risk of developing mucositis when receiving chemotherapy agents. So we always want to look at those kinds of things up front to help us prevent mouth sores from developing. There are some specific medications that are out there that are specific for prevention of development of mucositis, but of course they are approved, FDA approved for very specific therapies. one being for autologous stem cell transplant, another one for people who have head and neck cancers, so certainly not approved in this kind of population or the drugs that we might be providing for treatment of T-cell lymphomas. There are other things that certainly if you look online, you're going to see things about cryotherapy or actually having people suck on ice to help prevent mucositis or development of inflammation in the lining of the mouth. But unfortunately, that cryotherapy works only for very short-lived chemotherapy or agents, meaning that they have a short half-life. And so there are only a couple of drugs that that cryotherapy or sucking on ice will assist with, not really any of the drugs that we would be, again, using in this particular population with T-cell lymphoma. Certainly, there's another therapy called laser therapy, which I personally have not ever used, but unfortunately, it's also something that is a time factor. It takes a fair amount of time to be able to receive this therapy, which we are not, we don't always have that time to be able to do that before we need to start therapy for folks. So one of the things that I also wanted to remember when we were talking about mouth sores specifically, but remembering that chemotherapy agents, they are known to cause mouth sores, that they can affect any what we call mucous membrane. So basically any membrane that is wet in the body. So that can include your nasal passages, your sinuses, and actually your entire gastrointestinal tract. So from the top to the bottom. So you can have effect with some of these chemotherapy agents. And just keeping that in mind, that if you have a sore in your mouth, that you could have sores all the way through your gut. So prevention is our upfront. After that, if there is development of mucositis or inflammation of the mouth, and actually even prior to that, we should be keeping your mouth as clean as possible. The tried and true and probably most common oral rinse is, and most institutions, I believe, use this, which is just salt or a salt and soda combination. And making sure that people rinse their mouths frequently with this, and it's basically just to help us keep your mouth clean as possible. There are certainly a number of other oral rinses that are on the market as well, and certainly different institutions utilize whatever their standard policy is. There are issues with pain, obviously, if you develop sores in your mouth. And we certainly need to be cognizant from you that you are having discomfort, either with chewing, with brushing your teeth, with swallowing, so that we can assist you with pain management, whether that is with topical rinses that you just rinse your mouth with, that can help with some numbing, as well as sometimes those mouth sores can be pretty severe, so you need more systemic therapy. So even sometimes narcotics that are utilized to help with that pain management. Oral care is so very important when you're going through chemotherapy, making sure that the mouth is clean, maintaining your standard oral care, so continuing to brush your teeth, and flossing if you've been a flosser in the past. So that those kinds of things are very important and also assist with decreasing your risk of developing mouth sores in the future. The dry mouth syndrome, which is very common after receiving chemotherapy, because the chemotherapy affects your salivary glands, just like your hair follicles that can be affected and lose your hair. The mouth can become dry because you're not producing the saliva as you were previously. And so there are a number of saliva substitutes that are available on the market. In my experience, I think that for most folks, that just simply keeping their mouths wet by continuing to sip water, drink water, or whatever their fluid of choice is, to try to maintain a moist mouth. And that it's important not only from a comfort standpoint, but also decreases your risk of developing cavities. When you have a dry mouth that is consistently dry, you can have an increased risk of developing cavities down the road, and actually can increase your risk of developing mucositis again with subsequent cycles of chemotherapy. So speaking about mouth sores and dry mouth then kind of leads directly into nutritional concerns. And certainly when you have are having issues with your mouth, whether that is just dry mouth or have sores in your mouth, certainly we also know that chemotherapy can affect taste for people, and certainly can lead to weight loss. It's kind of like that circular pattern of a negative circular pattern with weight loss. And certainly nausea, vomiting can, if you're having issues with chemotherapy and having nausea and vomiting, then those also lead into our nutritional concerns for people. And simply anorexia, or the loss of appetite, just no desire to eat. And so, you know, always looking at those nutritional concerns are very important for us from an overall standpoint. So we, our first line, though, is always to make sure that you are adequately hydrated, making sure that you are able to take in fluids. It takes very little time for someone to become dehydrated, and can affect symptoms such as nausea and vomiting, as well as, of course, affect organ function, i.e. primarily your kidneys. So our fluid intake is always forefront. And then after that, then calorie intake, protein intake. When we are treating someone with chemotherapy, we're obviously breaking down tissues because, unfortunately, good cells die along with the bad cells that we are trying to treat. And so your body is also trying to repair those tissues constantly. And so protein intake and calorie intake is very important. I often have folks really focus on if solid foods are very difficult for them to eat for whatever reason that is, whether it's taste or their mouths are sore, really focusing on liquid supplementation at the forefront, and then kind of moving from there. Most people will tell you who are going through chemotherapy or have gone through chemotherapy that cold or cool foods are better than warm foods, and I think primarily because of the warm foods have more smell to them, and sometimes that will lead to increased nausea. I actually spoke with a patient just the other day, and being in oncology for over 20 years, no one had ever told me this before, but he made a comment that when he eats with his mouth open, that he actually has less nausea when trying to eat. And so he's chosen to do that and has eaten much better since he's done that. So all of these things lead into issues with quality of life. I mean, all symptom management issues that we have after receiving chemotherapy really, truly affect our quality of life, whether that's nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea, or skin rashes, and what might go along with that, with itching, mouth sores, having dry mouths. All of these affect truly your quality of life. There are so many issues that you deal with that also with body image. If you're having lots of skin rashes and how that affects your feelings about going out into public or going to work, if you're able to continue to work. And also, certainly, if you're receiving chemotherapy, that can affect your hair, You know, having hair loss certainly is a huge issue for many people. And of course, weight loss as well, if you're having troubles with eating. All of those things certainly affect quality of life. And the fatigue that goes along with both the disease process as well as the therapy that you may be receiving for the lymphoma affects your ability to be involved with your family. And you know, maybe you're the soccer mom that is has been taking your kids to all of these things after school, and now you're not able to have that involvement with your kids. And so all of those things so much affect your quality of life. You know, looking at how do I help or assist with those changes in my life or things that are affecting my quality of life, certainly what we're talking about, hopefully helping with controlling some of these side effects, but also looking at other things that may assist you. Thinking about going to a counselor or a therapist to gain some outside support as well, or support groups. Many people have very positive feedback with regard to support groups that where they can talk with people who are going through the same things or have gone through the same things that they're experiencing and feeling as if they're not the only one that has gone through that. And it seems so supportive for so many people. Certainly looking at medication support, antidepressants certainly can assist because obviously, you are in a situation where your life has been changed and taken over, oftentimes by your healthcare professional wanting you involved at the clinic all day long or in the hospital. And so, depression is a real issue for so many people going through this. So, and I'm going to wrap up there. Many of these topics, I think we could all talk with you about for an extended period of time. So, we would certainly appreciate your questions after the next speakers. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. This is an outstanding presentation, really so informative, lots of detail, and I think that there definitely will be questions for you during the Q&A. So thank you so much. These are such important issues that everyone struggles with on a day-to-day basis. Thank you. Our next speaker is Brian Tomlinson. Brian is Chief Program Officer, Lymphoma Research Foundation. He also is the architect of today's program and has helped to actually support it as well, secure funding for it, as well as really think of the critically important topics that we should be offering today. So I'm going to turn the program over to my colleague, Brian Tomlinson, at the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Brian?
Well, thank you, Carolyn, and as always, thank you to you and your team at Cancer Care for our wonderful partnership and collaboration. The Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care, we've worked together for over 15 years to provide these calls for people affected by lymphoma. I'd also like to thank Dr. O'Connor as well as Lowell for their excellent presentations and for taking time to be with us today. And lastly, I'd also like to acknowledge the supporters of today's call, Allos Therapeutics, Celgene, and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest lymphoma-focused nonprofit organization, and we're devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing the lymphoma community with timely information on the disease. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve people affected by this disease. LRF invests millions of dollars each year to combat lymphoma and assist those whose lives have been affected by a lymphoma diagnosis. The foundation remains dedicated to identifying a cure through an aggressively funded research program and to helping members of the lymphoma community by providing comprehensive disease-specific programs and services. To date, the organization has funded over $47.5 million in research, and more than 40,000 people participate in our programs each year. LRF provides a comprehensive series of programs for people with lymphoma and for their loved ones, which include our Lymphoma Helpline, where our professional public health and mental health staff can assist you in your search for information about lymphoma, as well as appropriate resources. A Clinical Trials Information Service, where a member of our helpline team can assist you in your search for clinical trials. A National Lymphoma Support Network, which is a one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients or caregivers with volunteers who have had similar lymphoma-related experiences. a variety of free print and online publications and newsletters, including 4 comprehensive disease guides, over 25 disease-specific fact sheets, and a variety of informational electronic newsletters. We have over 75 webcasts and podcasts available on our website that talk about specific types of lymphoma, treatment options, as well as support topics. We also offer in-person patient conferences on the local, regional, and national levels. For more information about the organization, please contact a member of our helpline by calling us at 1-800-500-9976 or visiting our website, which is www.lymphoma.org. Again, thank you to Carolyn, our speakers, and the sponsors of today's call. Carolyn?
Well, thank you, Brian, and thank you so much, first of all, for letting people know all about the resources of the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Many of you already may be accessing those resources. If you're not, we definitely encourage you to do that. And also just for this long-term collaboration that we have worked together, and so thank you so much, Brian. Our next speaker is Jennifer Viano, and Jennifer is Chief Executive Officer, Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. And Jennifer also has been a supporter of today's programs and helped to fund the program today. And I'm going to turn the program over to Jennifer to talk a bit about the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation as a resource for all of you.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, and good afternoon, everyone. It is really great to be with you on the call today, and it's absolutely wonderful to have so many people with us on the call. I'd like to first thank our collaborators, the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care, and our generous corporate supporters, Alice and Celgene, whose support has made today's call possible. Thank you so much. And I'd like to thank Dr. O'Connor and Lowell for their wonderful presentations. They were absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. With so many helpful topics that were discussed today in our call, I know that many of you are going to greatly benefit from the information that was shared. The side effects that were touched on and how to better manage them are issues that arise frequently for patients affected by cutaneous lymphomas, and I look forward to making the recording of our teleconference today available on our website, so that many more patients can benefit from all the information and tips that were discussed today. And I specifically wanted to mention that at our foundation, we have a lot of resources to help patients with itch, so please be in touch with us to access those resources. And one important message that I want to convey is for people affected by cutaneous lymphomas to keep in mind that the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation is always available to help you with information, resources, and support that include educational opportunities, how to locate specialists, information on treatment options, more helpful tips for managing symptoms and quality of life issues, one-on-one assistance and support, the latest news and research and advocacy efforts, and importantly, ways that patients can connect with other patients. Programs that are available at our foundation include patient educational forums in the United States and Canada, our website available at www.clfoundation.org, our physician and treatment center referral network, a library of printed and electronic education materials that include printed and electronic newsletters, personal assistance available via phone and email, research funding, and advocacy efforts. The Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation exists to make sure that each person with cutaneous lymphoma gets the best care possible, and we really encourage you to be in touch anytime that we can be of help to you. Again, I want to encourage you to please visit our website at www.clfoundation.org often to learn about upcoming educational forums that you can attend and other educational resources available to you. And specifically, I'd like to mention that in the first half of 2012, we will be holding patient educational forums in San Francisco, Toronto, Columbus, and Raleigh, which may be in your area. We'd love to see you there. In closing, once again, please be in touch anytime and let us know how we can help you. And thank you again to everyone for being with us on the call, and we look forward to staying in touch. Carolyn?
Thank you very much, Jennifer, and thanks for those very warm words to everyone and also for the resources of your organization. Thank you so much. Our next speaker is Rick Dickens. Rick is an oncology social worker, blood cancers program coordinator, mind, body, spirit project coordinator at Cancer Care, and Rick is going to review with you the psychosocial support services that you can access from Cancer Care. Rick.
Thank you, Carolyn. Greetings to everybody on this call and especially my esteemed fellow speakers. Building relationships with all members of your healthcare team is important, especially with a chronic cancer like T-cell lymphoma, as Dr. O'Connor had mentioned. But it is also important to build a personal support network of family and friends from your neighborhood and community center or house of worship. For many patients, it is hard to say, I need help. But for people who care about you, helping is one thing they can give. That is why with a chronic illness, building a support network is so important. And by reaching out to as many as possible, you help the caregivers to spread the help and thereby help themselves. Accepting changes are normal during treatment contributes toward nurturing your body and spirit, but stressors can elicit feelings of sadness and frustration. What is happening to the patient can make family and friends feel helpless and scared as well. This is when it is helpful to seek help of a social worker or other professionals from organizations such as Cancer Care. Cancer Care has oncology social workers who inform people of resources and strategies for finding help, which can include creating a blog to keep people informed for those who are computer savvy, or mind-body-spirit techniques to calm the mind and relax the body during stress. Along with education and resources, Cancer Care provides some financial assistance, counseling, regional face-to-face groups, and national telephone and online groups for patients and loved ones that are facilitated by professional oncology social workers. Groups provide role models, emotional support, coping strategies, and validation you're not alone. To many social supports, getting to know your healthcare team and support groups go a long way in helping to confront the difficult challenges of cancer. And daunting as they are, with help, they are never impossible. You can call Cancer Care and speak to a social worker at 1-800-813-HOPE or our website at www.cancercare.org. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rick, and thanks for identifying all the different services that people can access as well from Cancer Care. And now we have time for questions. We have to have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Janitha to bring on Dr. Barbara Breaux, Lowell Anderson-Reitz, Brian Tomlinson, Jennifer Viano, and Rick Dickens, all of our speakers on board, and we're going to take as many questions as we can from our audience. So if you could explain to the audience how to queue up and ask questions, we're going to take as many as we can.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered, or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone.
And actually, the question that came in from one of our online participants, actually, is a question really about fatigue, really, in terms of coping with it and how daunting it is in terms of, and wanted to know a little bit more about fatigue and exercise. So I'm going to ask, Lowell Anderson-Reitz to address it, as well as Dr. Barbara Breaux.
The fatigue is one of those such a major issue for everyone, and can really drag folks down so much. No pun intended with that, but it is a major issue. The exercise part of it, and Dr. O'Connor actually touched on this as well, that having a regular exercise program is so important, and there's actually been a number of studies, primarily most of them in the breast cancer population, and looking at exercise and fatigue very specifically, and has shown over and over again that fatigue is actually greatly improved when people do in fact have a regular exercise program. I certainly like to use physical therapy as well to kind of help direct people with an exercise program. Sometimes it's hard to, number one, motivate yourself to do that, and number two, know what to do with an exercise program. So I would certainly highly recommend that kind of a focus, and certainly in larger metropolitan areas, I think that there are also some focused groups as far as exercise programs for people experiencing cancer and cancer therapy.
Excellent. And Dr. Pro, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I do agree completely with that. You know, I do advise my patient to keep some sort of exercise during treatment because I think that is extremely important. You need and must avoid to have muscle atrophy during treatment, and that unfortunately sometimes happen because, you know, patients are taking sometimes high doses of steroids, so that actually can make the fatigue worse and the muscle weaker. So it is important that you keep some sort of exercise, and I do agree with Dr. O'Connor, the best exercise during treatment is actually walking. Because you can pace yourself, you know, you can stop when you feel tired. You don't have to do walk too long or too much. You know, when you get tired, you can stop and you can do it a few times a day if you can. So I think that's probably the best exercise.
And Carolyn, this is Rick. Yes. I would just like to add also fatigue and definitely support the idea of exercise. It's very important. But a lot of times the physical fatigue can lead to a mental fatigue, can contribute to depression or such. And there are wonderful techniques, albeit yoga and things like that, that are light exercise, but also have a mental component. Many forms of meditation, especially Western models of mindfulness, do have walking meditations. And that includes the exercise for the body, but also can help the mind focus, get the mind a little time to get free of a lot of the stressful thoughts that can also be contributing to fatigue over time.
Excellent. Because, you know, people often think, well, gee, if I'm tired, I should take a nap and just rest. And could we comment on that, just Dr. Pro, in terms of, so what about this concept of napping, and but then how much napping is okay, and really keeping moving about?
Yeah, I think napping it's okay, you know, especially, again, depending on what type of chemo, you know, whether or not you have, you know, you're newly diagnosed, so you probably have a lot of disease, so that can also cause more symptoms. So I think napping it's okay, but again, you know, patients should know when it's time to do some of their daily activities so that they keep moving during the day and they keep the muscles going and the whole circulation going. That's extremely, extremely important.
Thank you. Now, another question from one of our online participants really has to do with some of the wondering if there's any type of alternative therapies to deal with some of these side effects. And Dr. Pro, I wonder if you would address that.
Well, you know, there are a number of studies that are addressing several types of alternative medicines. I think at this point we really don't know enough about the impact of these alternative methods to control disease-related symptoms or treatment-related symptoms. So I think outside of a clinical trial or outside close supervision from the treating physician, I think I would not advise alternative treatments.
And could you say a bit about clinical trials, because we haven't really said a lot about that during the call, and clinical trials that are being conducted in terms of side effects management, or just the concept of clinical trials, which everyone may not be as familiar with?
T-cell lymphoma, as Dr. O'Connor said, it's an extremely rare disease. And in the past, we have used treatment that are used for B-cell lymphoma to treat T-cell lymphoma. And unfortunately, those are, in the majority of cases, not effective. So we have tried to design clinical trials that are specifically designed for T-cell malignancies. So, and because of that, we, as you know, have actually had the approval of new agents for the treatment of both cutaneous T-cell lymphoma and systemic T-cell lymphomas. So clinical trials are extremely important given that this disease is very, very rare and the standard treatment is sometimes not effective. So in terms of strategies to to increase tolerability to treatment and decrease the side effects related to treatment. There are not many. We know for some treatments, like treatment with pralatrexate, which is a new drug that is approved for the treatment of systemic T-cell lymphoma, one of the major problems is mucositis. And sometimes, you know, the mucositis can be really debilitating. And so we know that patients on this drug have to take both vitamin B12 and folic acid. And I know there are a number of clinical studies being about to begin to actually look at other possibilities in order to decrease the mucositis, such as looking at the blood levels of these vitamins prior to starting treatment, or perhaps even increasing the vitamin supplementation during treatment.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question, Teresa.
Thank you. Our next question is from Sid G. Your question, please.
Oh, hi. I've had T-cell for 5 years. The past 2.5 years I've been on varenostat, and I find that causes fatigue, and I find each day after lunch that I really have to have a nap. I do walk as often as possible, and I just want to know if there's anything else that I can do either to avoid the fatigue or sort of cut it back, if at all possible. Thank you.
So that's an excellent, these are excellent questions, and I know I've concerned everyone on the call. I'm going to ask Dr. Pro to start in addressing that question. Dr. Pro?
Yes, so depends on how long you have been on vorinostat and what is the dose that you are taking. In some cases, I find it that perhaps, you know, if the disease is well controlled, perhaps, and if it, the fatigue is really a major problem, you know, maybe just decreasing slightly the dose can actually make you feel better. But again, you know, you always have to balance the effectiveness of the treatment with the ability of decreasing the side effects. As also, I want to make sure perhaps you are not having low hemoglobin. Sometimes that can also cause worse fatigue during treatment. So I don't know, you know, if you are anemic and what is the severity of your anemia if you are anemic. And also make sure the electrolytes are okay, potassium and magnesium, and you are taking enough fluid during the day, because I know vorinostat can also cause a lot of nausea, and that sometimes affects the ability of you taking enough fluid every day.
Excellent. And we'll see, you'll run those things past your physician, but those sound like wonderful recommendations. And
yes.
Lowell, did you want to add to that?
Just a couple things. I would also, I always, with fatigue issues, also want to look at things like vitamin B12, or look at those levels. Do we need to do any supplementation there? Also looking at folks anytime people are going through chemotherapy, and certainly combination chemotherapies, looking at metabolic things like thyroid function, making sure that we have not decreased the thyroid function, and which can certainly affect fatigue as well. So I always try to, you know, look at the other things that you may not always look at or think about associated with cancer chemotherapy treatment. So.
Excellent. And, you know, really, you're raising the issue of the differential, the concept of the differential diagnosis, fancy word for figuring out what's going on. And I wondered if Dr. Pro and Lowell would just say a little bit more about that concept of what, you know, what goes through the process of figuring out, to really assess what is really the cause of something, and then also figuring out the best way to approach it. Because I think, Sid, your question really, and many of your questions actually sort of beg that question, like how are we going to figure out what's going on here, and what more can be done for me? So, Dr. Pro, do you want to start by just defining what that means in terms of a differential diagnosis and how you do make these assessments, the things that you kind of run through?
Yeah, so usually, you know, patient on treatment or with a diagnosis of T-cell lymphoproliferative disorder, we usually get blood work. So baseline blood work, again, will include blood counts, and the first thing we look at whether or not, you know, there is anemia, so that can can be associated not only to the treatment but to the disease itself. So, you know, want to make sure the hemoglobin is high enough, that it's not causing problems, as I said before. And again, you know, also, you know, looking at also the type of treatment that, that the patient is taking, because some drugs are more likely to cause fatigue than others. So, you know, again, you have to look at the old, at everything before you can actually decide, is the fatigue related to the disease, is the fatigue related to treatment, and if so, what is causing the fatigue? Is the fatigue caused because, you know, the patient is not able to keep up with fluid, or as Dr. Anderson Ritz said, you know, perhaps there is dysfunction of the thyroid gland, so the thyroid gland is not working properly, so the levels are too low, and that can cause significant fatigue too. And then, you know, again, as Dr. Anderson Ritz said, you know, also vitamin, because if treatment causes significant nausea and the patients are not able to eat, of course there is a vitamin deficit. So I think you have to exclude the possible causes before you can claim, well, it's definitely related to treatment, or, you know, I'm going to treat the patient for several weeks and see if the fatigue improves, maybe it's related to the disease itself. So it's a work in progress that you have. It's a work, you know, something that you have to work on every day with your patient in trying to decide, you know, what is causing the fatigue and how can you best address it and how can you possibly treat it. So it's not, it's a very complex issue.
Well, thank you. And Laura, do you want to add to that?
I well stated, and I don't really have anything to add to that, except one thing that doesn't really have to do with developing a differential diagnosis, but just a comment about that oftentimes there are multiple factors that may be causing a particular symptom, that it may not just be the chemotherapy drug, or it may not just be low hemoglobin, or hypothyroidism. Sometimes it can be a combination of things, and that can be associated with so many of the symptoms that people experience going through cancer chemotherapy, that it could be the chemotherapy drug, it could be the antibiotics that we're using to prevent infection, it could be multiple factors, and just keeping that in mind too, that we can't always point our finger at one particular thing. So
that's an excellent point, and I think the importance of I'm going to also stress and the importance of the doctor-patient communication piece here, that we definitely would encourage everyone here, for any symptoms that's troubling for you, that you continue to raise it with your healthcare team over and over again in terms of any concerns you may have, because that's really very important that these get attended to, and they often don't know what those concerns are unless you tell them. I'm going to ask Rick to say a word about support groups and how people often will encourage each other to be sure to raise any concern, anything that's troubling them, with their healthcare team, with their physician and the whole team.
Thank you, Carolyn, and definitely I've led many support groups, and there's no better teachers than other people who've gone through that. So sitting down with other people, other patients, sharing your experience and learning from them can really be a safe place to let some of your stress out, and a trusting place, and also to increase what Carolyn already said about doctor-patient communication. It's important to have communication across all of the systems that you interact with. You definitely rely very heavily on your doctor and the healthcare team to manage your physiological disease and what's happening there, but you have the emotional impact, and that's going on, and that's having an impact on your family system, on, as Lowell had mentioned, for those of you who are working, on your workplace environment and other areas. And many times in groups, groups themselves, because other people are confronting all of these other, these many areas that are changing in their life, it is a safe place to address this and to find out from others how do they address it with loved ones, with medical professionals. And Cancer Care offers groups, and all of our groups are facilitated by oncology social workers. And for those around the country, we do this by telephone and online. For those in the tri-state area of New York, we do that face-to-face.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of our speakers. This has been an extraordinary call. I want to say thank our speakers. I want to thank all of you who've asked questions by voice on the call, and those of you who've sent in your questions to us online as well. And I want to thank all of you who've been listening. I do want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour education workshop. However, I also want to remind all of you that although the program will soon end, the services that you can access from all of us, those continue endlessly. And so the services from Lymphoma Research Foundation, the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and Cancer Care, those are there for you as long as you need them. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already, take advantage of those services. We're all here to help you. And I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone. I want you to know that you're part of a community of support and that we are here to help you. I don't want you to feel alone in dealing with T-cell lymphoma. I want you to know that you're part of this really support community, that we're here for you. We're also entering a holiday season, and that poses its own particular challenges to everybody. So I do want you to all take advantage of all of the services that we all offer and to really get that support and help that you might need. If you didn't get to ask a question, you can call any one of us. We'll be happy to take your questions. And I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.